Fortunately, I have my relatives coming up just this time.
Okay.
Son, granddaughters, daughter-in-law. Usually, you can hold down the Mesa to them, but.
I was gonna ask you where today you live, Mesa.
I'm rethinking this whole sweater choice.
Call to order, the regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Adwell Water District, November 19th, 6:00 PM.
Not the 19th.
It's December.
It's December 7th, actually.
I'm on the wrong agenda, just a second.
You're looking at the minutes.
Yeah, that's it. There we go. Okay. No, December 17th, 6:00 PM. There we go. Mission statement, to provide reliable water and sewer service in a safe, cost-effective, environmentally sound manner in accordance with the community needs. Roll call.
Director Olson.
Here.
Director Hotchup.
Here.
Director Davis.
Here.
Vice President Prefer.
Here.
President Shep.
Here. Any public comments? No, we'll move on.
Sure. Is that all you're doing?
Consent calendar, minutes. Any comments from the board members?
No.
No.
Okay. Financial reports, any questions?
No questions, but comments. We continue to be under budget on our expenses. We're on a cash basis. Are we expecting something big coming up in the future that, like SDG and SCE isn't billing us? Are we actually ahead of, actually really ahead of budget?
No, right now we are on track, but.
But is there anything else like that where we're expecting some kind of a?
No, no.
Well, congratulations. You guys, that's fantastic. That's really, really good.
Elizabeth has another opinion, yes.
Well, you asked me to slow down, so that's what we're trying to do. We want to build, you know, we spent quite a bit of money this past year, so he needs to.
On capital improvements.
Yeah, capital improvements. I'm talking about expenses. The expenses that were budgeted are far higher than what we are actually incurring. So I think that's really, really good, you guys. Congratulations.
Vice President Prefer.
I don't have any comments.
Okay. And then the operations report, any comments on that?
7% loss. I love being under 10% consistently. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Same, 7% is very, very nice because it's believable.
Yeah, the guys are working hard to make sure it stays that way.
Director Prefer?
No comment, just, yeah, I agree.
We'll go right into the general manager's report then.
Okay, so first thing is the MHI study. We've gone through the first and second rounds. The first round gave us 71 total surveys. Second round gave us 38. We're at 109. They notified me, told me that we were supposed to, or we needed 90 more surveys to get in. I found out last week they are doing a third round push on surveys. Last week when Audra came into the office, she had 18 more. We put a push, we did emails for customers to stress that, you know, they fill out that survey. Tyler had, how many Tyler, 12, 13 or more come in? So we sent those names to to Audra, and she's shipping them the survey. We're not allowed to do it. And then hopefully we'll get about 40 on this third survey push. So.
What's in the survey? What do they ask?
What do they ask?
You know?
I saw the survey, I don't know.
Is that house income?
The household income.
Yeah.
What about if you're, what if you're a business?
No, business not allowed to.
No.
And that's when they need to withdraw, I thought.
Okay.
only residential, but
that's
Long has 72,000.
The reason I was asking is because if I was going to fill one, if ICC was going to fill out, I would be the one to do it. So
thank you.
You don't need them. Yeah. You can't use them.
And Craig has 72,000 for residential. Thank you.
So the board signed a reimbursement resolution last month for the environmental, or for the liability program. The reimbursement form that's going towards the wastewater project and grant funding. They needed that reimbursement resolution to, that was the last document they needed to upload into the application process. So that has started. They did upload it, so it's gonna take some time. They gotta resend that in. We were initially approved for right around 10 million for that project. So we're moving forward with that. Idaho Water was presented a recognition award for maintaining exceptional low claim costs from JPIA, the liability program through our insurance. So thanks to staff, no claims, no injuries throughout the past couple of years. We maintained 20% or less, so we were awarded a presidential recognition award, which we have. So that was nice to hear, which will ultimately, our costs will go down, or are going down. So that's saving us some money. Brian just finished the cross-connection control specialist course. So that's the last course that the state requires for any district to have a cross-connection specialist. He will now be able to handle our district as a whole for the new requirements from the state for the cross-connection control program. So we, in 2027, we're supposed to have all our hazardous the hazard compliance records that he has to go out and certify all the cross-connection or the backflow devices. So he'll be able to do that. We don't have to hire a company to do it like we did in the beginning. So this is all saving us some money. We purchased a new generator for Fern Valley 1A. That one, it has reached its end of life, so we just received that. I ordered it, I don't know, several months ago. It finally came in, so that's on site, and we're trying to get that wired in and pull out the old generator. So that should be up and running to run that facility here shortly. And that's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Jerome, you had a question?
Yeah, we were talking about that reimbursement. So the last document you need in your application for grants for the sewer plant was this reimbursement thing where the board says that we, if we are incurring any expenses, we will be able to reimburse those when grant money appears.
Right.
So the past money spent in engineering could be reimbursed when that grant money comes through, right?
Or when we do break ground and our incurring costs at that time, yeah. During construction, we'll
right.
be able to recoup those costs.
And you said there's an initial approval of $10 million. That's initial, the board has approved that they would.
The
would,
state
would be willing to
reimburse. Yeah, the state said,
right.
here's $10 million. It's available. We still have to qualify for it.
Okay.
So we're now
$10 million is available. So is available if your application is, if they like your application.
Yes. Initially, they've gotten all our documents and they saw the project that we're attempting to build. So the project that we're presenting or did present, they've have given us the go-ahead for $10 million, but there's still final requirements that, like this application.
You have to finish your applications.
Yeah.
So it's a long kind of dance. It's not like you just send in your stuff and get...
No. Then it's going to have to basically go through loan approval, and there's going to be other requirements, because we're talking grants here. So if for some reason our study, the MHI study comes in and we're high, then it's going to knock us out of grant funding. So these are some of the requirements. That's why we're doing this study.
Right, that thing of the economically disadvantaged community is one of the dangles.
Requirements, correct. Yeah, we're right on the edge. And we possibly could still be on the edge.
And you need to get up to that. There's basically you want to get a total of 200 responses from this.
Correct.
You're still missing 70, 80, a good chunk of them.
We'll see.
Right.
We're close. I mean, within, 50, 60, 70.
Okay, so 50 to 70 more applications, more replies you need.
Correct. And then they have to tally it up, and we have to... We have to come under $77,000
per household.
250 or something like that.
It's 77, that's the...
That's the new standard?
Yes.
To be a disadvantaged community.
I mean, we're considered disadvantaged, but to their standards, we're not, because of the medium household income is over their medium...
Of course, there's a lot of businesses are on the sewer. The sewer serves the business
there
district.
Is.
And that makes it complicated.
They don't
but
complete the survey.
They're not included in the survey. It's only residential.
Okay, that's interesting.
And we'd very much like to have adequate representation from the people that are renting, and
yes.
Because it's not just owners, it's residents, and so the people that are renting should definitely respond.
Right, so that's where your that's where the income thing begins. Yes, it's a lot of part of the scale. So you'd like to have adequate representation from renters.
Yes.
Yeah, responses would be great. That makes a lot of sense.
Anything else?
If I could go back to the financial thing.
Sure.
So housing, so there's this thing where when you discussed this before, on the page where you do warrants, you then conclude them on
Did
the
you
warrants.
Use cardstock for your notes today?
Unfortunately, you get what you get out of the copy machine.
Yeah.
You've got to run over there and change every door.
It happens on Sunday morning to me.
So, on the warrants, we always include several deposits to the agency for payroll. Those are round number in the $30,000 range, and there's usually depends on how many payroll periods, right? So the 2 weeks periods might be 2-3 months, right?
Sometimes two. Sometimes if I have a beginning balance in the bank, I need only like two instead of seven.
Right. And so that's part of the warrants, and then you add to that total of payroll. We know this total of the bottom of the page is not a meaningful number, so you've taken all the warrants, and then you've added double accounting for the money paid out of HMC, not through checks, but probably electronically or something, right? So you've added in that $84,000, but there's... And so you're usually trying to keep a cushion in your payroll account.
Yeah, but like that, we don't have wire. It's the only option I have to don't write a check to do a wire, and we don't do wire.
Right.
So we write a check to transfer between the banks.
Right.
This is why it confuses you to find transfer from BNC or Chase Bank to Bank of Hemet, because we're doing only Bank of Hemet for payroll and retirement. So the one that confuses the warrant need to count. I cannot delete it from the warrants. I understand your point, but still, because we don't do wire or there.
So this total district warrants and other disbursements is actually larger than the total outflow of money being sent out, because three of those warrants make up a little more.
It's going into one of our other accounts.
Right, so that number is not very helpful. This doesn't mean anything, essentially.
Well, it shows everything that we are transferring. It actually is actually more transparent than the wire transfer method.
It includes the disbursements and then a second round of disbursements when those are disbursements. So some of the money is kind of twice in that total. So
correct.
If we see that totals now.
But if you need the net warrant, you take the idle wire check out and you have the net warrant for yourself.
All right. And so usually at this month is 66, 90, 102,000 deposited into the account, but 84 paid out in payroll, so you're putting like 16,000 extra in this month. Usually every month it's over.
Yeah, but us is a retirement, because we pay retirement. The company for Schwab is deducted automatically. They have access to him in bank to withdraw the retirement every month.
So the retirement also comes out of that HNC?
Yes, sir.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Mm. Anything else?
That's it for now.
Okay. Mr. Olson? Ms. Harshaw?
Thank you.
Mr. Davis?
No.
Vice President Prefer?
No questions, thank you.
Thank you for listing the other things that the staff has done. The field staff, they do a lot. It's nice to see all the things that they're accomplishing. And when I meet with you on a weekly basis, it's always good to hear all the things that they've done, all the things that they're completing, and all the maintenance that they're keeping up on so that they don't fall behind. And I think that's a really good job that you and the staff are doing. So I thank you for that.
Thank you.
You want a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Tyler?
Yes, we need to go back. And the motion for the consent calendar, we did not vote on.
Okay, let's do that.
I made that motion.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
I'll second it.
Excellent. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, abstention? It passes.
Good job.
Did Ryan whisper in your ear?
Yeah.
Right.
He didn't whisper in mine.
He did not mean, I was like, yeah.
Right.
We were
somebody. Good thinkers of words.
Somebody. All right. Item number three, the AQUA JPIA recognition. Staff will present the AQUA JPIA President's Special Recognition Award received for maintaining an exceptional loss ratio in the JPIA insurance programs. The award acknowledges the district's strong performance and commitment to reducing claims. Sounds like nobody got hurt.
Nobody got hurt.
What he said.
Everyone's staying safe, washing their backs, taking care of each other out there doing, you know, working in the ditch, fixing leaks, no wrecked vehicles.
What?
All of the above.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Right now either.
What's that?
No ice this year, yes.
No, not yet.
Yeah, but
yeah, well, the last time we had a wreck, it had nothing to do with the ice.
Trees seem to pop out everywhere.
Yeah. Tractors on their side.
Yes.
Front ends rolling under. Yeah. A lot of that has disappeared in the last year.
It's amazing.
Yeah. All right.
New trucks still look new.
Yeah.
Even better.
Well, I don't think we have to vote on that because it's just a discussion item. So unless there's any other comments?
No. Just congratulations.
Everybody thinks it's great?
Yes.
We want to pass around the...
Do we have to sign it?
No. It's already signed.
Sorry for the pizza on there.
It's a good thing, actually, because our workers come, if any accident or anything can happen bad, they will increase our rate.
Yeah.
Our rate side out is very steady.
Good. All right, we'll go on to item number four then. General Counsel report on new laws that take effect in 2026, including updates to the Brown Act and new training requirements for local agency. This would be covered in 4 minutes and 38 seconds. Wow, you've been down that small. That's fantastic.
So it says, I can maybe do that for you all. Thank you, President Shelley, members of the board. I just wanted to update you kind of on two big ones. SB 707, which has updates to the Brown Act, And then SB 827, which is an update on training requirements for public officials, which all of you are. So I'll do SB 827 first. I'm sure you're all familiar with AB 1234. It's the current requirement that at least once every two years, you're required to take 2 hours of ethics training. This bill requires...
Do we always have to take that in a resort town?
No, we can go to Banning.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
AB 827 now requires that all public officials take what they call fiscal and financial training. Like AB 1234, this is a requirement that you must take once every 2 years. It goes into effect January 1st of 26. And the policy behind this, the governor signed it. It was a bill by Senate Majority Leader Lena Gonzalez. And they thought, as public officials, you're handling public money, it'd be a good idea to make sure that there's, you know, some minimum level of education that public officials take to ensure transparency and good governance. The training needs to cover four different areas, and that includes laws and principles relating to short and long-term fiscal debt and investment management, responsibilities of financial administration relating to management of municipal budgets and public resources, general fiscal planning, and then broader ethics of safeguarding public resources. Because this is new, there's not a lot of materials out there quite yet. There's not specific guidance on exactly what a public agency needs to do to create the materials, but what it does say is that agencies should contract and otherwise collaborate with recognized experts in local government finance. So it is kind of an onus and a requirement that may be somewhat costly for public agencies to now look into and to collaborate with financial experts in this area to prepare materials. There's a couple ways that you can satisfy your requirements, very similar to AB 1234. You can take it online, assuming an online course is created. If there's study materials that are prepared, you can take study materials and then take a test afterwards. CSDA is actually offering a training in March. It's the first training that I'm aware of that anybody is offering. And if you want more information, you can let me know and I can send you the link to that.
Where's it at?
Bottom Desert, I think so.
I'm sorry?
Bottom Desert.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was an in-person place. Is it Bottom Desert? I think it's online as well.
Yeah, both.
Both? There you go.
Timing?
2 hours.
No.
I'm sorry.
It says every 2 years. So does that mean we have to do it? It goes into effect January 1. Does that mean we have to have it done by December 31st, 27?
Yeah, so those that are current public officials, as of January 1st, 26, when this law goes into effect, you have 2 years until January 1st of 2028. The exception is...
That's 2027, by the way. January 1st of 28?
Yeah, 28, 2 years, yeah. Unless you start your term as a new public official, and by the way, this is public officials on a board or department heads. This is now a requirement that department heads of a public agency must take this training. So certainly Bill and Hosni, and then if there's other department heads that, you know, are under the district's employment, they would need to also take this training. So if you start as a public official after January 1st of 26, you have 6 months to take that training. Whereas before, with AB 1234, you would have 1 year after becoming a public official to satisfy your ethics requirements. So it's a little more stringent. You have 6 months from the start of your service to comply with the financial training requirements now. Another requirement, this is more for the agency. The agencies now have to have the ability for the public to either find certifications for compliance on the website or to provide information for the public to request the compliance confirmation, which is essentially a certificate. So once you take a training, as you know with AB 1234, they're going to issue a certificate, it'll have your date of completion. We're required now to make sure that you turn those over to the district. The district will then either make it available by posting it on the website or having some information where the public can request confirmation that all public officials have complied with this requirement. And that website information requirement not only applies to the new training requirements for finances, but it now also applies for the ethics requirements and the certifications that you're already receiving pursuant to AB 1234. And then the district is required to hold on to their certificates for 5 years. That's a 5-year record retention policy.
So once we are posted in the website, it needs to be stable 5 years, right?
If you post on the website, it should stay for 5 years. Or if you know, if you have a link that says this is how you can request the information, so long as we have scanned or hard copies at the district, should somebody want them, we have the ability to produce them.
And we have to keep those even if the director is no longer with us.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we should have them, because if they took it while they were with us and they're no longer here, we should just make sure we maintain those records. And lots of water districts now, they are posting the actual certificates, just so they don't have to worry about a records request. They can simply say, it's there for you to look at.
Right.
We have it, but they've been posted.
That's the gist of SB 827. I don't know how enthusiastic you are about additional trainings, but there we have it. As you know, current members, you have 2 years for compliance. I'm sure there'll be other opportunities beyond March once more and more agencies work with financial experts and get training materials. And I'm sure there'll be online courses and study materials that you can take if you want.
I just hope that those financial trainings aren't at casinos, because that would just be a, you know, that wouldn't make sense to me.
No, it's not a have to, it's a have not to.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
That's right. It's a way to test your financial savvy, right? One other bill, SB 707, a lot of news is surrounding this bill. It again goes into effect on January 1st of this year. I will say it's probably a little bit overblown for those agencies that don't qualify as eligible agencies. So there's a distinction under this bill that basically has two classes of public agencies, those that are considered eligible and those that are not. For eligible agencies, these are large public agencies. They're cities that have over 30,000 residents. It's therefore special districts that have over 200 employees or an annual budget of, I think it was $400
million? $400
million. Needless
we
to say,
almost made it.
I say
this would be so nice.
Doesn't classify as an eligible agency, and therefore a lot of the additional requirements don't apply to the district. But what does apply? Yeah. So for those eligible agencies, they now are required to have teleconferencing for all of their regular meetings, so members of the public can participate remotely. That's not a requirement for the district or for any public agency that doesn't. It's not classified as an
eligible agency. So, no requirement.
The classic, what we refer to as the classic Brown Act rules, those still apply. So, if you want to attend a meeting remotely, you can do so, so long as you provide the address of where you're going to be attending that meeting and post an agenda at the door of where you're located, whether it's your home or a conference room at a hotel, sometimes if you're traveling for business. And then you do have to make that area available for the public. So if you're attending remotely and your address is on the posted agenda, you need to make sure that you make that available for any member of the public who may want to join and participate in that meeting from the remote location that you're at.
Even if I'm in my swimsuit, I'd have to let them in the room,
yep.
Is what you're saying.
That's what he's saying.
That would probably violate the rules.
That's right. That said, there needs to be at least a quorum of you present here within the district in a single location.
Physically
present, that's right. And then during those meetings where you have one director appearing remotely, all votes need to be roll call votes, even for consent calendar, for example. A new accommodation under this bill, SB 707, is for those that have disabilities under the ADA. There is now an ability for that individual to work with that public agency. And it does say there should be perhaps a program in place to follow, and it says consult legal counsel when it comes to whether or not that person qualifies as an individual that is disabled under the ADA, and if that is the case, they can appear remotely, let's say from home. They don't need to post their address on the agenda. They don't need to make their location available to the public. And we have, under AB 2449, there are some situations which we refer to as just cause or emergency circumstances that do allow, on occasion, directors to appear remotely. That's a finite amount that resets every calendar year. That doesn't apply if somebody is appearing remotely due to a disability under the ADA. So that person could attend an indefinite amount of time so long as they qualify as someone with a disability that needs that accommodation and can't physically come to this location.
So there are no limit for it. You can be unlimited attending remotely as long as the board agrees.
As long as they legally qualify as an individual under the ADA that needs this type of accommodation, then the agency is required. It's not a discretionary thing. They would be required to provide that accommodation for remote attendance. Yep. Just cause, we had this a little kind of separated in a prior bill that expires at the end of this year. We had just cause and we had emergency circumstance. There were kind of two different aspects of how you as a director could qualify to appear remotely. Under emergency circumstance, that was if you had kind of a physical ailment or if your family member did and you were not able to attend because of that. That did require a vote by the board to approve your ability to attend via remote means. The other aspect of AB 2449 is called just cause. Just cause is the only thing that's sticking around. And just cause doesn't require a vote from the board. You simply need to inform the board at your earliest availability, if you're not able to attend in person, that you cannot be there, and a short description of why you can't under the just cause requirements. And those are, if you have childcare or caregiving needs of a child, parent, or grandparent, or grandchild, if you have a contagious illness that prevents you from attending in person, if a need related to a physical or mental disability arises that the agency cannot otherwise accommodate, if you're traveling while on official business of the legislative body or another public agency, that's a just cause exception, or if a member has an immunocompromised child, parent, grandparent, or grandchild. That's a just cause exception. Again, you'd have to report that to the district to make sure that the board is aware of the fact that you won't be appearing in person. No vote is required for that. The new rule is that if somebody appears via just cause, it needs to be reflected in the minutes, but that's how the person attended. You are limited under just cause to appearing twice in any calendar year. So
Each director.
And that's dependent upon how many times the public agency meets. And since the district only has one regular board meeting a month, you're limited to two. So if you've used your two, it'll reset and you'll start anew in January. Again, you need to have all votes taken via roll call if you're appearing remotely. You also have to announce whether or not there's anybody else in the room with you that's over 18 and what their relation is to you. And you always have to have on both the video and sound. So you can't turn off your video if you're appearing remotely. That does need to be on, and you do need to be in front of it the entire time for that meeting. Is there any questions? I know this is a lot of information. So if you have questions, if it comes up, yes, President Shelley.
This one's probably not even applicable to what we've talked about, but I'm going to try. So it sounds like if I'm traveling and I'm on my way back and the flight gets canceled for some reason, so I can't make it back on time, which category does that fall into? And I still want to attend the meeting remotely.
That would be
just the cause.
Are you traveling for work or for district business?
Not for district business, but for my business.
It wouldn't qualify under just cause.
Okay. What would it qualify for? Nothing?
Nothing.
Would I be able to participate?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. You can attend. Does any other member of the public can attend? But you wouldn't be able to participate.
As a director.
That's right.
Excellent.
I have a question, and I you mentioned something about the number of people or the size of the district and whether we are required to do it, basically like Zoom.
That's right.
Did you say yes? We are required.
No,
we are not
no.
because of our size.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay.
So this is very important.
That was very important
because the new one for Coachella Valley, they need to have a replacement for Zoom. They need to have a team software. If the Zoom going down,
oh right, we have
to
have an alter
team.
Right.
But he said us not because we don't
because
have to require
because
200 employee and $400 million
okay.
income.
Did you catch that from the thing we
no,
did? Me neither. Okay, that's why I was felt that that was a little bit conflicting. That's why I just wanted to clarify that. And I thought that's what you said, but I kind of heard him talking to him. Is that
because I asked Jessica
CSDA thing
straight, and she said no, it's required.
Yeah.
But Ryan, thank you for him. He reviewed it all before the board, and he said it's not required.
Okay. That's not the impression I got from the CSDA webinar, but that's good to know.
Yeah, it's certainly not a requirement for those that don't qualify as an eligible body.
Right.
If you do, you are required. And there are large public agencies, there are large cities that currently do not offer any type of Zoom option. As a matter of course, if you want to participate, you need to be there in person. For those large agencies, that's changing. As of next year, they are now required to provide a remote option for the public to attend.
Okay.
If for some reason there's a disruption in service, they are required not to move forward, try to figure it out and try to assess the problem. And only if they cannot, after an extensive effort of trying to resolve, do they then need to take a vote and make findings that it is imperative that the body move forward irrespective of the fact that there's no longer remote means for the public to attend. So it's a lot of, there's some stringent requirements.
So if
some
they,
hoops.
If
some
they
hoops.
Lose the video, can they not still do it by audio though and continue on?
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Cannot
okay.
do it. Yeah, it
has to be
video and audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't seem to pertain to us, but I just.
Not to say that districts, you know, can continue to do it or have a remote option. It's just not a legal requirement under the law for smaller agencies.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And for ours, you know, we do have even a disclaimer up on our agenda just in case there is a disruption in services. We've made it very clear that the meeting will continue in the event of a disruption and that, you know, to the extent that you want to guarantee public participation, that you should show up in person.
Mr. Giroux.
I should do one question. Ryan talked about AB 27. There are four areas of new training: laws and principles, responsibility, financial illustration, public money, general fiscal planning, and I missed the fourth.
Yeah, the broader ethics of safeguarding public resources.
Yeah.
Four, Ryan.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see, there's a couple of other, maybe not directly related to the Brown Act, but this bill did update. There's a social media restrictions that were set to sunset at the end of this year, and this bill took that sunset clause out, so it doesn't expire, which means, you know, as public officials, you should be cognizant of how you're communicating with others on social media. I don't know how active you all are. But when it comes to commenting or posting or liking or using emojis, you are prohibited from doing so from one director to another on content on social media that pertains to district business. So if some, you know, if one of you says, I think, you know, we should, it's a great idea to enter into an agreement with consultant X. Nobody else can comment on that or like that or in any way indicate whether they approve or disapprove, right? Because that's something within the district's jurisdiction. And this is the one exception where generally when we say you can't have meeting of the minds when it comes to three of you because that's the majority, but two is safe. This is one area where two isn't safe, where one other person, if they commented, that would be a violation. So as a general rule, if you're going to be commenting about agency business, just make sure that nobody else comments or that everybody's aware of the fact that they can't comment on that post. Obviously,
so if I say it first, nobody else can say anything.
Nobody else can.
Oh my God.
Not to yours.
Oh, we
but
can.
If,
we'll
but
just
somebody
go to
else.
Jail. You don't have to worry about me. I don't have any social media.
That's true. You don't have any followers.
I don't have any accounts.
And no emoji, no thumb.
No emojis, yeah, nothing like that. No emojis.
Oh my god. Be like enemy for each other.
The other additional requirement, and I think it's probably more for the district than for directors, but there used to be a recommendation that each new public official be provided a copy of the Brown Act. Now it's a requirement. Public agencies need to provide a copy of the Brown Act to every new elected official that joins the board, effective January 1st, moving forward.
An official copy, or the League of Cities copy, or the amended copy, or...
Yeah. So
there's like 20 copies out there.
Yeah, and we've been actually getting questions of, does it need to be paper copy, because we don't want to waste paper, can it be an electronic version? And our advice is a full electronic version or a paper version will suffice. And hopefully we're not wasting too much paper, because I can't imagine there's that much turnover. But public officials do apply also to those that are agency heads as well. So employees and new directors, we should be providing a copy of the Brown Act to them. And with that, that concludes my updates. I'm happy to answer any other questions that you have.
Thank you. No.
Any questions?
No.
No. Thank you.
Any questions? Excellent.
So we're on 4 minutes.
That was a little bit over 4 minutes.
Was it over? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was prayer you were going to get in 4 minutes, but
yeah. All right, we'll take a short 4 minute break, and then we'll go into closed session.
Thank
you. Do you want to keep that until we go to back to open session directors' comments?
Yeah.